It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
There were prayer vigils, memorials, and charity drives all across our nation. Here in Shanksville, many of you raised up the first memorial, a wooden cross, a chain-linked fence, mementos and tributes pouring in, and dozens of American flags. A piece of America's heart is buried on these grounds, but in its place has grown a new resolve to live our lives with the same grace and courage as the heroes of Flight 93. This field is now a monument to American defiance. This memorial is now a message to the world. America will never, ever submit to tyranny. Since September 11th, nearly 5.5 million young Americans have enlisted in the United States Armed Forces. Nearly 7,000 service members have died facing down the menace of radical Islamic terrorism. Today, we also think of the more than 200,000 service members now serving overseas. And we think of every citizen who protects our nation at home, including our state, local, and federal law enforcement. These are great Americans. These are great heroes. We honor and thank them all.
All right, that was President, Barack Obama, because I was just reading something, but it's President Donald Trump. The distinction, of course, would be when he dared to utter the words radical Islamic terror, which never came off the lips of President Obama. It was banned from public discourse. It was pretty much banned during George W. Bush's time, too. And let me just say that under the leadership of Robert Mueller, the FBI banned it from their, scrubbed it from their manuals. The Pentagon did the same thing under the direction of Barack Obama. We could not talk about Islamic terrorism. We couldn't say Barack Hussein Obama when John McCain was running for president against him. We couldn't say that his middle name was Hussein. The restrictions, the changes since 17 years ago on 9/11 are really startling, shocking in many ways. I want to just pause, though, and talk about Shanksville for a second before I go to that, because Shanksville, Pennsylvania was where, of course, Flight 93 went down. And that's where Todd Beamer, the graduate of Wheaton College, did the heroic intercession along with others to take that plane down and stop it from being virtually a missile, probably aimed at the White House or the Capitol building. We'll never really quite know. I remember Todd Beamer was a strong Christian. He was on the phone with his wife when this happened, and you could hear him say, "Let's roll." But that story was quickly squelched when the movie came down. All of that was downplayed because quickly, even though we had been struck in such a dreadful, horrible way, and it was absolutely Islamic terrorism, just no question about it. Suddenly, we couldn't watch the images falling from the building. In fact, a policeman friend of ours in Chicago sent a picture of a man falling from the building, and Facebook covered it up and said, you know, you sure you want to see this image? Are you sure you want to see it? It was just him in a free fall, which is dreadful. But it's every emotion that we had, the natural inclinations to fight to protect ourselves and our families and our future were assaulted. I remember very distinctly I was on Crossfire with James Carville not long after 9/11. I think it was in the spring after that, maybe February, maybe March. And the topic of discussion was that the education department, the National Education Association, and others had sprung into overdrive to teach America's children that Islam is a peaceful religion and that there's nothing, you mustn't feel badly toward Muslims. So it's a peaceful religion that's what started it. It's just that part of it is just amazing to me. And of course, the fruit of that is that 17 years later, we have a college like the one like Ripon College in Wisconsin, who decided that they would not, I'll read from the article here, written by Dale Hurd. They decided that a September 11th memorial cannot take place because it creates an environment where, quote, students from a Muslim background would feel singled out and or harassed. I wonder if the people in the World Trade Center towers felt singled out or harassed. But I'm sorry, I digress. Citing reports of bias filed during last year's 9/11 Never Forget Project by Young America's Foundation, administrators ruled against the exhibit showing images from the 9/11 attack because radical Islamic terrorism doesn't represent the full gamut, and they show a very small picture of a specific religion or nationality instead of the larger viewpoint. Because a lot of Presbyterians were involved in that attack, right? Buddhists, Lutherans. Oh, no, I don't think so. I think it was Islamic terrorists, 100%. And so that's what's happened to America's colleges and universities and their grade schools, too. Meanwhile, in the commemoration at New York City, the son of a murdered victim had this to say.
Today's terrorism threat still includes sleeper cells, Al-Qaeda, all the kind of major terrorist organizations that you would think of. But we're also very focused now on homegrown violent extremists.
Radical Islamic extremism.
During the election campaign, President Trump pledged to battle terror differently than his predecessor, calling it what it is, as he did again today.
Of radical Islamic terrorism.
The president also vowed to wipe ISIS, one of the main influences of Islamist extremism, off the face of the earth, an effort terrorism expert Michael O'Hanlon gives him credit for.
I give President Trump credit for taking a strategy that President Obama had only gradually developed over time. Trump beefed it up.
But O'Hanlon says, like his predecessors, President Trump has not been successful in draining the global swamps that give rise to terrorism. Even as ISIS was being contained, the threat continued. Last year, 8 people were killed in a vehicle attack in downtown Manhattan. The perpetrator was following, almost to the letter, instructions posted on social media by ISIS.
Terrorism today moves at the speed of social media. Part of it is engaging with social media companies in a way to try to get them to do certain things they can do voluntarily.
And the threat is moving at light speed throughout all of cyberspace, taking on new forms.
Power vacuums are springing up across the globe and are quickly filled by hostile states, terrorists, and transnational criminals.
But how much has the terror threat really evolved in 17 years? Is a mass-scale 9/11 style attack still possible?
A September 11th style attack is still possible. There are still ways to kill hundreds of people at a time if you get your logistics right.
Preventing this new wave of attacks where these radicals go out with anything they can get their hands on, from a gun to a knife to a vehicle, that's far more difficult to detect and thwart.
Okay, that was John Roberts instead of the memorial in New York City, which we're going to play in just a second. But John, of course, is tracing, at least in part, what's happened since 9/11 and how things have changed. And as I mentioned to you before, President Trump emphatically kept declaring, and still is, thank God for that, that the terror strikes there are exceptions, but not many, are coming from radical Islamic terrorists. And it certainly happened on 9/11. And why can't we say it? And why shouldn't we say it? And why wouldn't Muslims who are peaceful, quote unquote peaceful, distance themselves from that and say, yes, that was terrible. You know, how can we help? How can we join in this conversation? Well, no, instead, many of them support the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is the PR arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the strong strain of Islam that we have in this country. Muslim Brotherhood is itself affiliated with the terrorist organization Hamas. The Muslim Brotherhood believes in stealth jihad, civilization jihad, destroying, as they say, our miserable house from within. And so in this last 17 years, they have been on a campaign to mute this response of Americans, to shame. They created the word Islamophobia, following the pattern of racism. And that's what they've co-opted, that whole business of calling everything racism. And now we call every objection every time we point out that the terror is related to Islam, that's Islamophobia. They've been very strategic. They are smart, smart, smart. And so the result of that is that Americans have been lulled into some sort of a silliness about what's happening. And Christopher Wray, I'm not sure in that clip that John played, we're going to play it in a second, where Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, said, you know, we are really focused now on homegrown terrorism. Well, trust me, that comes right out of the playbook of Robert Mueller, the FBI director, and then James Comey, who followed him, which was, you know, the real threat is not Islam. No, no, we're going to reach out to that community. In fact, they reached out to them so much that they were bringing their prayer rugs, wearing white Islamic garb in the middle of these FBI citizens' academies. I saw it with my own eyes because we're reaching out to that community. And that's what the FBI has been doing, reaching out to that community. When the terrorist attack in Orlando happened, they invited CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, to come in and sit with them while they were interviewing people in the local mosque to try to find out what that was all about. Because we're reaching out to that community, you see. And so CARE has infiltrated, and the FBI has allowed it. Robert Mueller started it, and it started actually under the Bush administration, where suddenly we can't talk about it, we can't say it is what it is. We have to politically, correctly, and incorrectly deny what is really true. I do now want to go to what happened in the memorial at Ground Zero, because the son of one of the victims, his name is Nicholas Harris, was pretty, pretty courageous in New York City when he said this.
Mom, I will never forget you with the abundance of love you gave me. And one more thing, if I may. This year, a representative of the House referred to our loss as just another incident. This year, a network commentator said the president's performance in Helsinki was a traitorous act, as was 9/11. And last week, a senator attacked a Supreme Court nominee and called him a racist for alleged comments after 9/11. Stop. Stop. Please, stop using the bones and ashes of our loved ones as props in your political theater. Their lives, sacrifices, and death are worth so much more. Let's not trivialize them or us. It hurts. To my mom and to all of you and your loved ones, never forget.
It was Harris, and of course, you can imagine, and he was on Fox this morning early. I wasn't even sure about his politics based on that, because what he was saying was just true no matter what your politics. But I think he is a conservative, and boy, being in New York under those circumstances, you can imagine, is not easy. And so that was yesterday, the commemoration, 17th anniversary of the terrible terrorist attacks of 9/11. Let me just tell you, an upcoming event this weekend is going to be Alex McFarland's Truth for a New Generation conference. Kamal Saleem is speaking. Kamal is a former terrorist. I've interviewed him several times. He's terrific. He's going to be one of the speakers. And if you'd like to go to truthforanewgeneration.com. It's near Nashville, truthforanewgeneration.com. And also, put on your calendar October 2nd, those of you in Ohio, because there'll be an In God We Trust town hall meeting led by Wes Wildman. Ed Vitaglio will be there, Vitagliano, and Brian Fisher. So that's October the 2nd in Ohio. And if you want more information about it, go to afa.net/Dublin. afa.net/Dublin. I'll be right back after this, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
Here's Steve Tiber.
8 Days of Hope started after Hurricane Katrina, helping people in Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, rebuild their homes back in 2005. Since then, this faith-based ministry has gone nationwide, and we've helped out dozens of cities, dozens of areas of the country after hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, or even snowstorms. And now you get a chance to be a difference maker. 8 Days of Hope 16. You can be the hands and feet of Jesus down in Houston from October 13th to October 20th. You can come for as little as 3 days or stay all 8 days. We provide the food and lodging. We're looking for skilled professional and people like me who are less skilled and just want to give back. For more information, go to our website, 8daysofhope.com. Click on the event, 8 Days of Hope 16, read the FAQs, and learn more about how you can make a difference with 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more and sign up to be a part of 8 Days of Hope 16 in Houston, Texas at 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
As Commander-in-Chief, I will always do everything in my power to prevent terrorists from striking American soil.
Today's terrorism threat still includes sleeper cells, Al-Qaeda, all the kind of major terrorist organizations that you would think of. But we're also very focused now on homegrown violent extremists. We had about 120 terrorism-related arrests last year alone. That's just in the arrest context. So there's a lot happening every day, 365 days a year right now in the terrorism front.
Yes, and you remember that those homegrown terrorists that the FBI was looking at are people like, you know, returning veterans, people involved with the National Rifle Association, Christian right-wingers. I mean, it's a really incredible list, and of course, they deserve every bit of attention that the Islamic terrorists do because they, of course, are guilty of so many terrorist attacks. That's how ridiculous it's gotten. And but of course, if you listen to different channels and you get your news from other sources, you're not hearing what I'm telling you this morning about President Trump and his courage on this issue. You're going to hear something like this. This is Joe Scarborough on MSNBC, who wrote a scathing editorial about how what a threat to America President Trump is. But Joe, in his own words, let's listen.
I love that line, that Roger Cohen line, America is an idea. And if you strip America of its ideas, forget about knocking down buildings in the financial district. Forget about running planes into the Pentagon. Those are tragedies, but those tragedies bring us closer together. America is an idea. You gut America of that idea. Mm-hmm. That's when you do the most harm to America. Roger Cohen wrote that right after Donald Trump was elected. And unfortunately, 18 months later, across the world, you have people looking at a country that is saying they want to ban people from coming to America because of their religion. You have just this week, Brett Kavanaugh, who wants to be on the Supreme Court, refusing to answer whether people should be banned from coming to the United States because of their race, in his reading of the Constitution. And the accumulation of that, the retweeting of neo-Nazi videos, Charlottesville. I mean, I could go on and on. What he said about majority black countries, that is tearing more at the fabric of America than attacks on the Twin Towers did. We rebuilt from that. We became stronger because of that. But this is, seems to me, a far graver threat to the idea of America.
The president is a far greater threat to the idea of America. You know, it is the world upside down. It really and truly is. You know, I have a list of the things that President Trump has accomplished since he's been in office, less than 2 years. It is stunning. It's small print, 6 pages. And I could add a lot more. I told you yesterday about just the notion of withdrawing from the International Criminal Court, which was coming after American soldiers for alleged crimes against humanity in the various wars that we fought overseas. Just this John Bolton putting his foot down saying, no way. And if the judges or the investigators try to come here, they may even be arrested. We owe nothing except to the Constitution of the United States. There is no authority over us. That was something that, unbelievably, during the Obama and even the Bush years, the beginnings of that, the fight to let the international court reside and dictate and determine the future of American citizens was pretty shocking. And that's just one thing. I could tell you a lot more. In fact, I'll rattle off a few of these. The U.S. Embassy was moved to Jerusalem. The president actually declared Jerusalem the capital of Israel. He secured the release of American prisoners from North Korea. He negotiated peace between North and South Korea. He signed an order calling for work requirements for the welfare program so that people can get their dignity back and learn to work for the money that they earn. He also proposed the biggest civil service change in 40 years, which is being able to fire civil servants. His motto was hire the best and fire the worst. He has shrunk the federal bureaucracy by 16,000 jobs. He set a record for lifetime appointed judges in 2017. He signed 96 laws in 2017. He rolled back $900 billion in Obama-era offshore drilling regulations. He repealed the Obamacare individual mandate. A climate change was removed from the designated threat list from the Pentagon. I mean, I'm just reading just a few of these. He shut down the CIA funding of the so-called Syrian rebels, which we know, and I've said to you before, John McCain was the champion on that, and those Syrian rebels were fighting against us. It was just nonsense. I'm not saying John McCain understood that. I never understood why he was supporting that, because we knew that all our materials and tanks and things were being co-opted by our enemies. But we just kept sending and funding, and it was ridiculous. So President Trump stopped that. But, of course, according to Joe, he is more dangerous than the perpetrators of 9/11. It's just madness. Oh, so much to tell you today. Let's move to Ed Henry, because I want to talk to you about the 2018 election. That is just so crucial. Ed did a great report last night on Fox. Let's listen.
8 weeks from today, the midterms will finally be here. Tonight, there are important primaries for two big U.S. House races in New Hampshire, but all around the country, there are some remarkable battles that will decide who controls Congress. One key House race that will determine whether the GOP can keep the House is in Illinois, where incumbent Peter Roskam is in a dead heat with Democrat Sean Casten. Here we are on the 9/11 anniversary, and Casten has already taken heat for recently claiming the late terrorist leader Osama bin Laden and President Trump, quote-unquote, have a tremendous amount in common. Casten later added, it does not take someone with a calculator to figure out that, in his words, there are Nazis and racists in the White House. And the Democrat tripled down by spreading this conspiracy theory that former law clerk Zina Bash was making white supremacist hand signals, basically a white power sign, at the Supreme Court confirmation hearings of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. That has been widely debunked, thanks in part to the fact that this is also an okay sign, but also because it turns out Bash is actually half Mexican and half Jewish and the granddaughter, yes, of Holocaust survivors. In the battle for the Senate, meanwhile, Democrats are cheered by the fact that they have some surprisingly close races, like in Texas, where Congressman Beto O'Rourke has given Republican Ted Cruz a very tight race, so much so that the president, who once called him Lion Ted, is now promising to hold a major rally for Cruz. And Republicans believe, even if they were upset in a place like Texas, they have big pickup opportunities in states like Florida, as well as Indiana, Missouri, and West Virginia, states the president carried big in 2016.
Okay, so that was Ed Henry. Thank you, Ed. Let me just say that, yes, Ted Cruz is in a real battle in his district, or in the state of Texas. Beto O'Rourke, of course, is his challenger. We've talked about this. Beto is a nickname. He's not Hispanic. I think he's Irish. Somebody told me, fourth generation Irish. But he's very charismatic. He's very charismatic. Ted is pulling in lots of money now from various conservative organizations who he was once at odds with, you know, like the Chamber of Commerce and the Republican establishment. Remember, he called Mitch McConnell a liar on the floor of the Senate. Ted was really at war with all of them. They wouldn't even eat with him at lunch. I think I told you that. They snubbed him in the Senate dining hall. But Beto O'Rourke has been raising barrels of cash. Of course, the left wants him to defeat Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is the enemy of certainly the LGBT community because of his strong stand on marriage, his strong moral principles. He's the enemy of a lot of people because of the outspoken statements and positions he's taken while he was running for president. Even John Cornyn is jumping in to help him, even though they've been at odds before. And let me just say that Ted Cruz and President Trump made peace a long time ago. And I know that President Trump has offered to help him win re-election before the polls are showing that the race is tightening up. President Trump is saying he's going to campaign for Ted Cruz at the biggest stadium in Texas that we can find. And so couple things about Beto O'Rourke. They're finding out about arrest for drunk driving. But the problem is, I think Beto was not honest about what happened. I think he tried to escape or leave the scene of the accident. Also, we know that Beto O'Rourke is on tape talking about how Colin Kaepernick was the right thing to do to kneel. That was the American thing to do. So there's some real divisions. This is what the left is doing. They're presenting candidates who are they're micro picking candidates for all these districts, whether it's the Senate or the House. And they are looking for, there's a record number of Democratic veterans running in various places because that plays well with the base. And of course, the theme that they're talking about is, working across the aisle, cooperation, not being partisan. But the truth is that each and every one of them, trust me, has been vetted to hold really views on the far hard left. And but then when they speak, they're engaging, they're smiling. Beto O'Rourke is very, like I said, he's very compelling, very charming, and people don't pay attention. So that's what's happening in Texas. Let me just say there are four states in which the Republicans think they can flip to Republican in 2018. And one of those is Missouri. Josh Hawley is running against Claire McCaskill. And it looks like he's ahead at this point, but because President Trump won by 18.5 points in Missouri in the last election. And so they think that Josh can actually pull this out, but they're pouring a lot of money into that race, trying to get him elected. That's Josh Hawley in Missouri. And then in Indiana, this is interesting because Joe Donnelly is the incumbent Democrat. Boy, I remember that race. Gosh, I remember that race. He had a really good opponent, a Republican, who they ended up shredding. I can't think of his name in this moment, but I remember talking to him a lot. He was a great candidate, and they destroyed his reputation on some silly thing, nothing of substance, because he was a man of really high integrity. And so Joe Donnelly scooted into that seat, and he's been there now for a long time. Mike Braun was the surprise winner in the primary. He's a businessman who's not been a politician. So right now, the favor the polls show that Donnelly is plus 5.7 points. But in Indiana, President Trump won by 19 points. So it's close, and people are, conservatives are, cheering on for Mike Brown. West Virginia, Joe Manchin, of course, was considered to be the most vulnerable incumbent on the map right now. He endorsed Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and of course, he went on to vote for many of the things that they wanted. He usually votes for the Democrats and the worst kinds of things on the left, even though he's got that aw shucks affect, Joe Manchin does. And again, he presents very well. This is what happened. John McCain did the same thing. When he would run in Arizona, he would go home during the election cycle and make speeches about securing the border and how we had to enforce our immigration laws. Then he'd get elected, fly back to Washington, and do the exact opposite. It's pretty stunning, and that's not unusual. That's why you, the voters, have to be smart, smart, smart. So Joe Manchin is being challenged by State Attorney General Patrick Morrissey. And of course, Morrissey defeated the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan at the Supreme Court, which would have destroyed the coal industry. So he's a champion to coal miners in West Virginia. Now, Manchin is up by 8.4 points. That's the RCP average. But Trump won West Virginia by 42.2 points. So that'll be interesting. The last state that Republicans think they can flip is the one that Senator Heidi Heitkamp represents. That's North Dakota. There's a Republican challenger, Kevin Cramer. Let me see. The average of the polls in that state is Cramer up by 0.5. That's half a point. Trump won that state by 36.3%. So that's interesting, and who knows what's going to happen. There's a lot to say about the House races, but Mitch McConnell was doing an interview in Kentucky this week when the polls came out and showed that the Democrats are gaining in the 2018 polling everywhere, and Mitch McConnell was asked about that, and here it is.
And so we know this is going to be a very challenging election on the Senate side. I'll just list you a bunch of races that are dead even: Arizona, Nevada, Tennessee, Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, West Virginia, and Florida. All of them too close to call, and every one of them like a knife fight in an alley. I mean, just a brawl in every one of those places.
All right, so that's Mitch McConnell, ever the inspiring Mitch McConnell. Yeah, so but he's right. It is. Nothing can be taken for granted, and we know that the left is. We know they're. Listen, we may not be able to trust the polls because we don't exactly know. Sometimes we know that more often than not, they are used to shape opinion, not to really reflect opinion. But we do know this. We know, for instance, that in Florida, the left came out like crazy in the race for governor with Andrew Gillum. And Andrew Gillum is the mayor of Tallahassee. He's a leftist socialist. And this is happening all over the country where especially young people. In fact, I'll read to you this. This is a report from Next Gen America, which is a political action committee created by billionaire hedge fund manager Tom Steyer. He's the one that ran the commercials to impeach President Trump. He's just pledged to spend millions and millions and maybe billions to try to defeat President Trump and conservatives. And according to Next Gen, voter turnout in Florida in college area precincts jumped in the primary based on preliminary turnout numbers. Turnout was nearly 10% higher in Alachua County, where the University of Florida is located, and youth-heavy precincts in Tallahassee saw five times more votes cast than in the 2014 primary. Kids are socialist kids. College students are showing up to vote for Andrew Gillum and other candidates like him around the country. They are energized. There's no question about that. In fact, Andrew Gillum raised $1 million in the 24 hours after winning the primary. He is running against, of course, Ron DeSantis, who was a member of the Freedom Caucus. Ron, by the way, just resigned from the Freedom Caucus. He said he didn't think it was right for him to be out campaigning and taking a check to serve in Congress. So he's given up his seat. If he loses the governor's race, he will not be in office. That's a pretty courageous thing that he's done. And it's shaping up to be a race that the whole nation is going to be watching, because Andrew Gillum is the left of the left, and Ron DeSantis is right of the right. And the left would love nothing more than to win have Andrew Gillum win the governor's seat. And the other thing about this is that the religious left is getting behind Andrew Gillum. Did you know there was such a thing? Yes, there is such a thing. In fact, I should tell you about that when we return. I can't tell you quickly. So stay tuned, and I'll be back in a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
All scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Christ's followers must contend for the authority of scripture in every generation. Current societal challenges that are described as culture wars are really societal attacks on the authority and application of scripture. American Family Studios has created a documentary film project that will aid you in effectively conveying a reason for your unwavering trust in Jesus and unflinching confidence in His Word. You need this in your life. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get this resource. You won't be disappointed.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Yesterday was a solemn anniversary of the day devout Muslims attacked the United States and killed 2,977 innocent Americans. We must never forget that Islam has been at war with the Christian West since the days of Muhammad himself. For 1,400 years, this dark religion, the creation of Satan, has dedicated itself to the extermination of Christianity and the followers of Christ. This conflict between Allah and Christ is a matter of urgent spiritual warfare. Islam represents the dark, unseen armies of Satan coming against Christ's people and the unseen armies of heaven. Our prayers are essential to the defeat of the dark prince of Islam. And let's also never forget that greater is He who is within us than he who is with the world of Islam.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Meet Roxy, nurse director for the Preborn Clinic in Southern California.
I have this lady, and she came and she was very scared. Boyfriend didn't want her to have a baby, and she said, I don't want this baby. We provided an ultrasound. She was laying on a table, and there it was. It was a small baby. Then she heard the heartbeat. She heard the heartbeat and she said, well, it's alive. After hearing the heartbeat, she made a decision that she was going to keep her baby. She also made a decision that day to recommit herself to Jesus.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country, helping abortion-minded mothers to choose life for their unborn babies. To find out more about how you can help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. There's trouble brewing on the Korean Peninsula. That may come as a surprise in light of reports that President Trump has agreed to hold a second summit meeting with North Korean despot Kim Jong-un. To be sure, another summit would be problematic if it proves again to be long on empty promises of the North's disarmament. Promises that simply serve to obscure rather than curb Kim's relentless buildup of his nuclear missile and other military forces. Even more worrying, however, is the prospect that South Korea's radical leftist President Moon Jae-in seems determined to engage in actual, unilateral, and reckless disarmament, among other unwarranted concessions to Pyongyang. The effect could not only be to undermine Mr. Trump's diplomacy, but perhaps to encourage Kim Jong-un to miscalculate and act on his dynasty's decades-long ambition to unify the two Koreas by force. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I want to pick up with what I was talking about because I didn't want to rush through that. Ron DeSantis, of course, is running for governor in Florida. Andrew Gillum is the Democrat opposing him. Andrew Gillum is the mayor of Tallahassee, and he is a socialist leftist. There's no question about it. Now, here's the interesting twist. I mentioned leftist Christians. You know, this has been happening for a long time, where the left finally discovered that if they were going to really fight the Christian world, certainly on the moral issues, what they started doing was setting up fabricated organizations with fake names. They'd set up a 501c3. They would create a web page, and it's like Catholics for Choice, like Nuns for Abortion. I mean, I'm making that one up. Catholics for Choice is actually one that they chose. They did. They started infiltrating and using pastors, people that have a degree from seminary or various other credentials to sort of neutralize the opposite. Well, look, this guy, this pastor so-and-so says this is all right. This father so-and-so says this is okay. These nuns think this is all right. And this is how they have infiltrated the church. And they've been very successful at it. Let me just read. My friend George Rasley from Conservative HQ wrote this just a few days ago. It's called Leftist Christians Target Florida Governor's Race. And we'll put this on our Facebook page because I only have a second to talk about this. George points out that the far-left Democratic Party, you know, the party that removed any mention of God from its platform and booed and cheered when a pro forma mention of the Creator was added, has found a new cloak for its anti-religious liberty policies, newly re-energized leftist Christians. And then George goes back in time and talks about how they did this back during the Vietnam War, and he mentions several people who were so-called religious leaders then. And he said those old religious leaders have now inspired a new generation of leftist Christian seminarians. And now they're back leading the sanctuary city, open borders movements with funding from anti-Christian billionaire and Nazi collaborator George Soros. And then also billionaire climate change fanatic and impeached Trump PAC founder Tom Steyer, who I mentioned earlier. They're being funded by them. I told you, remember the immigration table, which a lot of our Christian pastors and Richard Land was part of this video they did. Bill Hybels was as well. They used the scripture out of Matthew, the least of these. This group is very, very smart. With the money of George Soros and Tom Steyer, they go in and they co-opt and they woo. And part of it makes sense and the other part doesn't make sense. And that's how they make their inroads. Well, they've cast their lot behind Andrew Gillum in Florida. And black churches are presenting him as a Christian, which, of course, President Obama was a Christian, right? The fact that he loved LGBT rights and abortion of all kinds for any time, and he was a champion on radical sexual education for preschoolers, had nothing to do with it. He was a Christian, so they told us. But this is what's happening with Andrew Gillum as well. And so they're working through black churches and other churches in Florida, and it's going to be a battle between Ron DeSantis and Andrew Gillum. And speaking of the immigration thing, because I've seen the left, I first saw this when I was president of CWA. It was the National Association of Evangelicals. Rich Cizik, I'll mention his name because it's well known now, that Rich was the president then. The National Association of Evangelicals was a very reputable organization. I remember my own church in Chicago, the Evangelical Free Church, at the time, featured their information all the time. It was a lifeline for me as a person who was interested in politics before I was still a mom with kids and not really doing what I'm doing now. But it was co-opted on purpose by the religious left, and Rich Cizik was the stealth person. And I saw it drift left and then start doing some really horrible things on climate change, and then eventually on immigration, just irrational. And that's why many of us have set up this counter-evangelical immigration movement because the nonsense of the left has infiltrated the thinking, I think, even in Southern Baptist Convention, I will say. All right, so no time to talk about that today and expand it, but somebody sent me this yesterday, a friend of mine, somebody that you would know also, and I just wanted to play it. It's kind of out of context with our discussion, but it's common sense on immigration from my perspective. This is an interview that Dominik Tarczynski, who is a Polish member of parliament, he's also the vice president of European Conservatives in the Council of Europe, and he was doing an interview with someone in Europe. I don't know who. I can't identify her, but I just want you to hear it because I just kind of found this refreshing. Let's listen.
Let me just ask Mr. Tarczynski, how many refugees has Poland taken?
Zero.
And you're proud of that?
If you are asking me about Muslims' illegal immigration, none, not even one will come to Poland. Not even one if it's illegal. We took over 2 million Ukrainians who are working, who are peaceful in Poland. We will not receive even one Muslim because this is what we promised.
But I asked not about illegal immigrants. I asked about refugees. And Jean-Claude Juncker, the Commission President, says that you're racist. You sound proud of the fact that you haven't taken any refugees.
Of course, because this is what our people are expecting from our government. That's number one. This is why our government was elected. But this is why Poland is so safe. This is the reason why we had not even one terrorist attack. Look at the streets in Poland. And we can be called populists, nationalists, racists. I don't care. I care about my family and about my country.
So there you have it. And of course, they're trying to twist his words that you know, you're racist because you won't allow this massive Muslim immigration, which is what Germany has allowed. It's what France has allowed. It's what Sweden has allowed. And they're all paying this terrible price. Austria also, because it really was an invasion of young Muslim men, mischaracterized by the media and by the European Union. And they were forcing all the members of the European Union to take these refugees, so-called refugees. And if you didn't, you were racist. And so you heard his comeback. And I thought it was refreshing because he's speaking the truth. All right, I want to change the subject for a second because there's a lot of news on the so-called Russia collusion / FBI Justice Department collusion / FISA court / fight between Mark Meadows and the Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan, and the Strzok camp and the Strzok attorney, Peter Strzok being the FBI agent in charge of the Clinton and the Russian Trump collusion alleged investigations. But you know about Peter, so I don't have to explain it further than that. I don't think. But this is an update from Catherine Herridge on Fox just yesterday.
A new letter from House Republican Mark Meadows to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein says three April 2017 texts sent by FBI agent Peter Strzok may be evidence of a leaked campaign against the president. On April 10, 2017, Strzok tells FBI lawyer Lisa Page, "I had literally just gone to find this phone to tell you I want to talk to you about the media leak strategy with the Justice Department before you go." 2 days later, Strzok writes, "The two articles are coming out about Page's, quote, namesake, an apparent reference to Trump campaign aide Carter Page." And on April 22nd, Strzok writes, "The article is out," adding, "Well done." After the president tweeted about the congressman's allegations, Strzok's lawyer sent Fox this statement. The term media leak strategy in Mr. Strzok's text refers to a department-wide initiative to detect and stop leaks to the media. The president and his enablers are once again peddling unfounded conspiracy theories to mislead the American people. The Justice Department and FBI have not commented. Tonight, Meadows' office called the lawyer's statement a, quote, work of fiction based on the documents and evidence available to Congress. The Inspector General is looking specifically at FISA. Yeah. He's also specifically looking at evidence of leaks by the FBI and Justice Department. Republicans on the House side have been pretty optimistic that it will move forward maybe as early as next week. But as you know from your own reporting, it's kind of been a moving target. The key thing I think it will put to rest is questions about whether one or more confidential sources were run up against the campaign at that time and whether the dossier was the sort of rock solid foundation for the FISA warrant or whether they really had additional intelligence.
All right. Would you do me a favor? Would you not get tired of hearing about this? I realize it's in the weeds. And I was thinking as I was preparing the day, you know, it's not easy for me to keep track of all these details. I don't expect you to do that. But if you could rehearse in your own mind what's happened here and not forget, because what's happening is I think Chris Wray, the FBI director, is slow walking this until the election. I think the Justice Department's doing the same thing with Rod Rosenstein. They're hoping that the Republicans will lose control and this will all be stopped. This madness, this calling to account of all these people who were just trying to help the country by undermining the Trump presidency, by falsely accusing him of Russian collusion, by painting him as an idiot, a fool, an incompetent, so they could once again go back to what they thought was normal. And what they thought the country needed, because they, of course, know best. They broke laws. The FBI, the trusted institution, used its powers to lie, to leak to the press, to try to destroy a president that most Americans voted for. It's just, listen, Watergate was nothing. Trust me. Watergate was a one-time burglary. And the one office. It was the DNC office, and I'm not defending a burglary for the DNC office by members of the Republican opposition, but that's what it was. It wasn't a complete attempt to undermine the constitutional order of this country. to force your will using, you know, the awesome powers of the CIA, the Director of National Intelligence, to try to destroy people like that you didn't like General Michael Flynn, who was kind of the tip of the spear. Many people are saying that they think that one of the reasons why the media and the left and the establishment came after Donald Trump so hard was because, for the most part, the intelligence agencies wanted to get General Flynn because he tried to expose what was happening with them during the Obama administration. You may remember that he lost his job because he spoke out publicly about what was happening, and they have hated him ever since. And so that's just one part of this. It is just the most corrupt, shocking story you can imagine. So please don't get tired of hearing about it until we can get to the bottom of what is true here. And let this be a motivation for you to get to the polls in 2018. You know, if you have to just hold your nose and vote for certain people that you might not normally support, but you feel like you understand what's going to happen, that the wheels will unravel. Everything will go backwards. Everything. Environmental regulations, the economy, the strong position on terrorism. You think the terrorists have been quiet for no good reason? They've been quiet because Donald Trump has been in the office calling out who they are and what they do. That's why they've stayed on the down low. Trust me, it will be back again, all of it, in full force and worse. And so, but what Catherine was saying, just to be specific, is that Mark Meadows and others, including Jim Jordan, sent a letter to Rod Rosenstein, calling to attention these newly released email between Peter Strzok, the FBI agent in charge of the Clinton investigation, and the Russian collusion alleged with the Donald Trump campaign. You know about there. He had an affair with Lisa Page. The attorney was working with Andrew McCabe. And you know about their texts, how they hated Trump and how they said they had an insurance policy in case he got elected. But what we're learning now, and could I point out, where have these texts been? Why didn't the FBI release these texts? Well, these texts said things like this. I had literally just gone to find the phone to tell you I want to talk to you about a media leak strategy with DOJ before you go. And then a later one said, Strzok suggested an article about Page's namesake, that's Carter Page, who was the excuse for starting this investigation along with George Papadopoulos, which is another story. So then he says to her that an article came out just after this text was written in the Washington Post. And then he congratulates her. Well done. You know, on the article came out, well done. I mean, these texts are so damning. And so Strzok's attorney responds, oh, no, that the media leak strategy was Strzok referring to the department-wide initiative to detect and stop leaks to the media. And Mark Meadows' response was, if Peter Strzok and his attorney expect people to believe Mr. Strzok didn't make contact with various news outlets during his time at the FBI, after all the documents and evidence we've seen, they are trying to sell a work of fiction. And in fact, if Mr. Strzok did lead an effort to control leaks, as his attorney suggests, it's worth mentioning that such an alleged affair was clearly a failure. So it looks like the FBI was the one leaking to the press, leaking like a sieve, trying to create the impression that Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians, and that the man in charge of investigating the president for this was the man doing the leaking with his lover Lisa Page. It's an amazing story. Please don't lose your passion for it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.